This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Your last sketch on Saturday Night Live was your punk rock persona, Ian Rubbish, with this incredible lineup. It was almost like your version of We Are the World.
Yeah.
And it had your longtime collaborator, Kerry Brownstein from Sleater-Kinney. Jay Maskus gets up there from Dinosaur Jr., Amy Mann, Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth, Michael Penn. And I wondered if there were any Spinal Tap moments in pulling together that all-star collaboration.
Well, that was just people who are like both from my record collection and then also friends, you know, Kerry, of course, being a close friend. And it was a dream. The whole thing was a dream.
Hello, Cleveland!
Turn your speakers up to 11 because it's time for Too Much Effing Perspective, the podcast that asks musicians and entertainers to relive their most Spinal Tap moments when nothing goes right and everything gets kind of weird. I'm your host, Alan Keller, a comedy writer in LA and former lead singer of the least heralded Chicago band, The Falling Willendas.
And I'm your co-host, Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead and former lead singer of the least heralded Milwaukee band, The Vainglorious.
Our guest today is Saturday Night Live legend and co-star of the hit IFC shows Portlandia and Documentary Now, Fred Armisen.
Fred tells us about George Harrison dropping a Spinal Tap reference, his all-time favorite drummer joke, and how he nearly escaped being run over by a car while filming a Portlandia sketch.
So without further ado, let's go to the TMEP show.
It really puts perspective on things, though, doesn't it?
Not too much. It's too much perspective now.
Alex, in 1997, or thereabouts, my band, The Falling Willendas, were asked to provide a song for a Nicolas Cage movie in development called, I think it was Wild Card. And I remember seeing the script, and this entire scene was written around Clove Oil and Demerol, a track off our second album, Belittle. And it was a big deal to us.
Yeah, it's cool.
And ultimately, as things have gone in my career, we were told that our song had been replaced by some other one in a totally different genre. And no, it wasn't a polka or a Gregorian chant, but it made me so effing angry. I vowed to write my own movie to place my music in. And that basically started my shift to writing comedic screenplays.
Well, I actually didn't even know there was anger that got you into comedy. That's funny.
That's the only reason anyone gets into comedy, Alex. I don't think you know that.
Shows what I know.
Yes.
I'm a happy guy. That's why I'm not in comedy. anyway, but the Willendas did have a band poster in John Cusack's movie High Fidelity, and it was like prominently placed. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that was cool. But what I wanted to say is making the shift from music to comedy is incredibly tough. A lot of people I know in LA get hired over and over again by people they came up with on the stand-up circuit or in the improv world. And, you know, when I came out to LA, I didn't have any of those relationships, and it really took time to build them. That's why I so admire our guest today, Fred Armisen, who went from being a drummer in various bands to being arguably the most interesting and innovative performer in comedy.
Yeah, and Fred really has become a one-person comedy powerhouse. I mean, let's see, 11 seasons on SNL, created the two IFC shows you mentioned, including Portlandia, which is near and dear to my heart. He's made appearances on Barry, Parks and Rec, Curb Your Enthusiasm. He does a lot of VO work for animated characters and movies. I mean, he's got it going on.
Yeah, it's not like he's left his music behind because he integrates it into a lot of what he does. Just check YouTube. His appearances on Fallon and Conan, he's always doing something music-wise in that.
And his comedic partner, who has also been a guest on our show, Kerry Brownstein, has successfully made that same transition too. In fact, it's not even really a transition because Carrie has her feet in both worlds. She's been a comedian on Portlandia, directed a mockumentary film with St. Vincent called The Nowhere Inn, and she's still cranking out music with her band, Slater Kinney. So she's doing it all, and it's, in a word, effing incredible. I guess that's two words.
You know, it's funny. The only two interviews I've been nervous before is this one with Fred and the one with Carrie, because they have both excelled at what I do, comedy and music. And so it's very intimidating to see and talk to two people who are so good at really two very different skills.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah. I think it's something to really admire. And remember, Alan, envy is a deadly sin. And I need to keep you around. Just between us, we can't afford to hire another writer, okay, if you bite the dust. So try to get beyond the envy and let's just onward and upward, old chum.
Well, my credo is onward and envy.
Oh, boy. Anyway, let's get to our chat with Fred. But first, listeners, Alan and I would like to talk with you and hear your thoughts on Too Much Effing Perspective. What is it you like? What don't you like? What guests would you love to hear? What can we do to make the show better for you? So if you're interested, please email us at hello@tmepshow.com. Again, that is hello@tmepshow.com. And we'll get a Zoom set up. We'd love to speak with you along with other fans of the show. So on to Fred, but first, a short break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant, evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, man, I gotta hear that. Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.
And now, a comedian who's played drums with Devo, Matthew Sweet, Blue Man Group, and Seth Meyers' late night band, Fred Armisen. So, Fred, you are the perfect guest for our show. Why? Because you're a legit musician like the Spinal Tap guys, Christopher, Harry, and Michael. You're also a legit comedian like those guys. And you also have Documentary Now, which is a mockumentary fest. And in your repertoire of characters, you have rockers like Ian Rubbish, who I love. And what's the Blue Jean Committee?
Blue Jean Committee. Yeah, that's from Documentary Now.
Got it.
But yeah, it's like parodies of different types of bands.
You're in this exact same space as Spinal Tap. So we'd like to know what your favorite scene in Spinal Tap is. And also, give us your perspective of why Spinal Tap in particular resonates with musicians so strongly.
Well, they somehow really, I don't know if it's from their experiences or what, but they really matched perfectly the experience of being in a band, big and small, no matter what it is, they really nailed it to the point where, like, I saw an interview with George Harrison where he references it. He was talking about going on tour and used Spinal Tap as a description, you know, for those kinds of conditions. And they just got every little bit of it right. And somehow it also wasn't just an inside joke. It wasn't something only for musicians. Everyone loved it. It's a perfect movie. And in my years of being a comedy writer, and I've said this to Michael McKean, that we still, to this day, go to the writer's room. And if we want to do any kind of music parody, we still have to say, oh, we can't do a bass thing because Spinal Tap already did it. Or we can't do this thing because Spinal Tap already did it. Their real estate, they claimed it so much that you're just like, you know, we don't want to retread that. It really has a proven shelf life. It's still funny. Those performances are great. The music is great. It's just like a movie that everybody loves and the movie still works.
You know, we know CJ Vanston, he's like the fourth member of Spinal Tap. And CJ said that Spinal Tap was on tour and the bus driver came out and goes, you know, you're the only band that never played that movie, This is Spinal Tap.
Yep.
Because of course, Spinal Tap would be the only band that wouldn't watch This is Spinal Tap. It's required viewing for everyone else. I mean, I remember when my band, The Falling Willendas, were in Madison recording our second album at Butch Vig's Smart Studios, we watched This is Spinal Tap all the time.
Right,
it got us in the mood to record. It was almost like watching a home movie. It captured our experiences so perfectly.
Yeah. And even though everyone's had these experiences and you can identify with being in a band, there's also a lot to be said for like those characters.
Right.
It wasn't just that they dressed up with long hair and did solos. Their faces, you do want to get to know them more. You're like, who is that guy? They seem very real.
Mm-hmm.
They seem very different from each other. And I wonder if that's sort of a secret ingredient, you know, that as people, those are great characters.
Yeah, they didn't really cop out and just do archetypes, did they?
As far as archetypes for Spinal Tap, I think there's just something to be said about the dynamics of a trio who are successful. So when you get to a successful place, like who really got them there? Who is the real songwriter? I feel like Harry Shearer's character is like many bass players, sort of a little bit forgotten in that mix.
As he describes himself, yeah. The lukewarm water.
Yeah.
The conduit.
You could almost say, is he more like John Entwistle? You know, is he in that zone of person, like a substantial figure, but definitely not the main songwriter or singer?
Right.
And I think in general, the rock and roll experience is limited, and that's why a lot of people can identify with the certain characters.
That's what I think too. And also, they're so good at playing British that you just wonder about, like, where did they grow up? What was their town like? Because I often wonder that about bands from the 70s. Their sound is so heavy, but they come from like the cutest, quaintest cities or towns or whatever. And I wonder how that happens. I wonder how you can come from something so pretty and just want to make a sound that's so ferocious.
Well, we never know what happens behind closed doors.
Right.
Well, and it's also like it somehow still inspires it, because like even the hardest American bands, you know, California is a very pretty environment. And still, Black Flag came out of California.
Right. Fred, after all that talk about Spinal Tap, we did not hear what your favorite scene is from the film and why it resonates with you.
Oh. What is my favorite scene from a Spinal Tap? I think when they cut to them in the 60s on TV, you know, listen to what the flower people say.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like that, the way they depict TV appearances and the sound of the 60s and the earnestness and the lyrics is shocking. I think people have tried it. And they think it's just like hippies with long hair. And it's like not as simple as that. And there's like people dancing. And it's like the set itself, whatever show they're supposed to be on, is so perfect. And just the way he's singing with such pure honesty and like really lecturing the audience is just so shocking. And the other thing is they didn't dress them up in long beards. I feel like the 60s looks less 60s than we think. So like the real 60s is the haircut he had. Like that weird, not quite a hippie yet, oh my God. And then the sound of Nigel's guitar is like that sitar sound. It's just, I can't believe it. I think that moment when it cuts to it is my favorite part.
Well, Christopher Guest is magnificent at detail. All his movies, you know, The Mighty Wind and Best in Show. I mean, it's all about the little things. He's so observant, you know?
Yeah, he's a genius.
Let's segue to musicianship, Fred. And you have played and you do play in so many situations. Your early band, Trench Mouth. You have played with Blue Man Group. You're the music director and drummer for Seth Meyers' band. And you played with Matthew Sweet on his album, Modern Art, right back in, I think, 2011. Can you share a Spinal Tap moment from your drumming duties in one of your bands?
Let's see. I've had so many. I remember in Trench Mouth, we'd show up and we're like, there's five bands and we're first at like 7 o'clock at night. Just playing to nobody for no reason.
Right.
It's almost like, who is this a favor to? There's no one in this venue. No one's happy about it. We're not happy about it. No one's happy. It's just like playing for absolutely no reason.
Yeah.
Not money. It doesn't get the show started. It does absolutely nothing. So we've had a couple of those. You know, they look up at the marquee and they talk about their dressing rooms and stuff. There is a thing that happens in bands, even when things are going bad, you do kind of say like, well, we get a free meal, or at least they have a place for us to stay, which is kind of nice that at least musicians do like to kind of make it better and go like, well, you know, it could be worse.
Yeah.
And then there's like, they have all their hope around their new album. And that's a weird thing too. Like when you're in a band, when you put out an album, at least in my case, it's not like, hey man, we're just gonna keep going. It's all cool. Here's some little bit more music. It feels like, hey, this album is gonna get us to the next level. This is about to happen.
Yeah.
So we're gonna tour and it's about to happen. This is gonna do it. You guys ready? Because this is out now.
Right.
So it's that same anticipation I identified with that, with Spinal Tap. And then when they see like the guy who's playing the Normo Dome.
Right. Duke fame.
Yeah. There is that too. You do bump into people who like, you know, you used to play with in small places and they're on to something huge. And you just go, hey, you know, how's it going? And they're on their way to the Normo Dome. There's no animosity there. For me, it always was fine. You know, they're doing great. But I've had some experiences where like we knew someone, we were at the same level, and then we bump into them again and they're fully on their way to like a giant tour.
Yeah.
So I watched something of yours, an interview on the off-camera show, and it kept me up, honest to God, all night. It was all about the Chicago music scene. Fred, we were in the same music scene. I was in the Falling Willendas. We were there from 93 to 2000.
Yeah, you guys played Lounge Jacks and Cabri Metro a bunch of times, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We played Double Door more.
Double Door, I gotcha. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that interview, you're like going through exactly what I went through. I mean, it should have been such a blast.
Yeah.
You know, you said you really couldn't enjoy the experience because you're so focused on making it with Trench Mouth. And I totally identify with that. I mean, I remember like even the great news would turn out to be something tragic.
Huh.
Like we were told we were going to get this fantastic review in the Chicago Tribune and it was going to be out any week. So every Sunday we'd check the paper and check the paper and check the paper and check the paper. And it didn't come out for 6 months.
Oh boy.
And it was a great review. It was 3.5 out of 4 stars. The Flaming Lips only got 3 stars in the same edition. But you know, it was so anticlimactic that we just couldn't enjoy it. So, you know, it's just tough to enjoy things when everything is a matter of life and death.
Yeah, yeah. The problem was with me. I shouldn't have thought of it as like there's any level of making it or whatever that concept is. Because like Baruch Assault, I love them and I'm still friends with Nina and Louise. I talk to them pretty frequently. But it's more like, why didn't I have the attitude that Jesus Lizard did? They weren't competing with anyone. They built something out of making great music, and that's all they needed. So I've forgiven myself because I was really young.
Yeah.
But I'm still like, damn it. If I had been a little more Jesus Lizardy, I just would have been a happier person. you know, or Tortoise. Tortoise also had their own happy life. And they weren't competing with anyone. They weren't like, we're going to make it. They're like, we just want to play great music and take our time recording. So that was just my own ambition. And the other thing is, like, I would never change it for anything in the world, because thank God that life went this way, because I love my life so much now that I'm like, whatever it took me to get here, great.
Awesome.
And by the way, in the end, I'm still friends with Trenchmouth. I'm still friends with all the bands that I envied, Smashing Pumpkins and Veruca Salt and all the, and Tortoise, Jesus Lizard. So it actually, in the end, ended up okay. I'm like, well, I didn't do the things that the way I wanted them to be, but at least I still get to be friends with Steve Albini. At least he's in my life. And then great. It worked out okay, not in the way that I thought.
That is really cool. And for listeners who may not know, Albini is a legend who produced Nirvana, PJ Harvey, The Pixies, Superchunk,
yeah,
and many others, even like Cheap Trick, Jimmy Page, and Robert Plant.
By the way, I wasn't disagreeing with you. I'm just saying that, like, I'm trying to put it in a perspective of also forgiving myself that I was 25 years old. And when you're 25, there's no thought process. It's just, okay, we got to go on tour. You know, this.
But you're not imagining it, though. Take yourself back to that scene and how much competition there was. I remember, like, I was at some coffee shop in Wicker Park. You always had to promote your shows because there was a million shows. Elbow Room, Lounge Acts, Beat Kitchen, Metro, Double Door, right? So I remember I gave my waitress a flyer. Hey, come see our band tonight. She goes, okay, come see my band Tuesday. And then the busboy came over. Honest guy goes, yeah, we're playing on Thursday. And I'm like, how'd you get a Thursday gig?
The lucky thing is, you know, you're talking about all these venues and all these bands. How lucky that we're in a city,
yes,
where there is a vibrant music scene. These are legit good bands. So yep, it's not like you set out to destroy those bands. Okay, you're a little competitive, but how nice. So many great places to play. And I have yet in my whole life to experience a city with that many great recording studios.
Right.
Chicago had such a recording studio culture. I loved it.
You saw CRC's gone now.
Oh, really? That I didn't know. But I'm very happy that I got to experience the Chicago music scene, and how great that we were there at that time when there were these great studios and bands and venues. Fantastic.
It was so much fun. And there's such an incestuous thing too, because I'll tell you something about Steve Albini, which was really funny. About 10 years ago, I get an email from his studio saying, hey, we have your master tapes. And I'm like, I never recorded with you guys. And so next time I went to Chicago, I went there and the Melendez put out an EP called Patty Cake and they had the master.
Wow.
And I don't have a 2-inch, so I don't even know if someone recorded over it. I have no idea what's on this thing, but it was, wow, what a weird thing. I never figured it out.
That's really strange.
Speaking of Chicago bands and drummers, do you remember the band Material Issue?
Of course.
So I was tour manager for the Bodines from Milwaukee, and we played a couple shows with INXS as a headliner and the Bodines and Material Issue together, a couple of amphitheater shows. And one night when INXS was on stage playing, the Material Issue guys came to our dressing room. We were hanging out. And their drummer, Mike Zelenko, said, you know, I've heard every drummer joke ever. There's nothing you can say that will hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a great way just to put his armor up, since drummers get the piss taken from time to time. So I wondered, Fred, do you have a favorite joke about drummers?
My favorite drummer joke is, what do you call someone who hangs out with musicians? A drummer. I like that one.
I have one that's in that vein. What do you call a drummer with no girlfriend?
Oh,
homeless.
Homeless. That's a good one.
Well, okay, speaking of drummers from Chicago, I'm good friends with Matt Walker. Matt was the next drummer in the Pumpkins after Jimmy Chamberlain.
Yeah, red hair.
And he was with Morrissey.
Very friendly, really cool.
Yes, and now he plays with Garbage. Well, then Matt said he was working at a bakery, and he said every time I go to Coffee Chicago, Fred would be there, and it was like being in a skit.
Whoa.
I said, we don't say skits, we say sketches.
Yeah, yeah, either way.
So first of all, I think you must have worked at a ton of Chicago's coffee shops because you worked at Urbis Orbis, right?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm friends with Eddie Jemison, who said he worked with you at Java Jive.
Yeah, I saw Eddie recently.
So Eddie said that you would pretend he was deaf and sign orders to him.
Wow.
And Darcy was in there too, right, from yep. Smashing Pumpkins, yep. Right? She worked with you guys.
That's early days of coffee shops where there weren't that many.
Hmm.
They weren't everywhere. That was like a rare...
Oh, really?
Yeah, 90s? This wasn't like every city had them.
I thought Chicago had more coffee shops than any place in the world.
Maybe later, but I think this might literally be 89 or 90 that we worked there.
Well, I have a sorry-ass Spinal Tap moment from a Chicago coffee shop. It was this place called Uncommon Grounds on Grace. I think it's still there. And I was asked to sing at a Jeff Buckley tribute just a few weeks after he died, back in 1997. And you know, Chicago was kind of his second home. So there's a lot of fans there, and I'm on stage, and everyone is super intense in the audience. You know, it wasn't so much a celebration of his music and life as a second funeral. So, you know, to break the ice, I go, you know, Jeff isn't performing tonight. And a woman in the front row busts out into tears. And later I found out that was his mom.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was not good.
Wow, wow, wow.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
So I have a question for you. You kind of answered it, but I want to ask it again. Would you have sacrificed the wonderful career you've made already for Trenchmouth being like the next Radiohead?
No, because first of all, I'm proud of the music we made and I'm proud of the friendships that I made with that and with Trenchmouth and my experiences. So like, there's no part of it that I'm like, we should have been anything else. That's what it was meant to be. I got to see the world. We toured like crazy and we got to play a lot. I got to drum a lot and so there's nothing I would change. I'm grateful that we got to do as much as we did. Like, I can't look at it complaining that it wasn't enough. I'm like, no, people came to our shows. You know, we had a couple empty ones, but like, we played Minneapolis. We played around Wisconsin. Even throughout California, I would say we played some shows and I'm like, that was an awesome, fun show and I wouldn't trade it for anything. None of it is like, oh, that should have been bigger. No way. We played Jabberjaw in LA. Man, that was awesome. San Francisco. We had shows in Texas that were fantastic. We played Austin. We played Dallas. We opened for No Means No in Houston, gosh, that was amazing. There's nothing I would switch out. I'm very happy with the way life turned out.
Fair enough. My comedy career isn't at your level, so I have to basically say, would I sacrifice my wife and two children for The Falling Will End as being big? And my wife doesn't really know what the actual answer is because it changes from day to day. And I think, you know, when it comes to SNL, you're on a live show in front of millions of people. And I think your Sgt. Pepper is the Californians, because it is absolutely, without a doubt, my favorite thing that Saturday Night Live has ever done.
I brought us some tangerines. This guy was selling them on the off-ramp over by the two. Devin? What are you doing here?
If I have to laugh, I watch that. Or Kristen Wiig with her baby hands.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're on live TV. It can't be perfect. You've got to have some incredible Spinal Tap moments.
Oh, interesting. Spinal Tap moments with SNL. I would say that sometimes the scale of things, like, you know, the Stonehenge thing, we didn't have a mistake like that. There was no mistake where it was like, we said it was this size, but like in your mind, the scale of the set is bigger in your head. You're just like, if I'm doing this kind of a sketch, you picture like this gigantic looking ballroom. And then when you finally watch it, you're like, no, it's a sketch show and the walls are this big and the, you know, the tables are this big. So
broaden your perspective of what a Spinal Tap moment is into something that just may not have been funny when it happened, but is hysterical in retrospect.
Like an unexpected curveball.
I mean, you could even call it a blooper.
Wow, that's a tough one.
Really? Is it that well run that you guys are just clicking it off perfectly every time?
It's not that things would go wrong. Here's a one-to-one. The part where Nigel's complaining about his sandwich backstage.
Yeah.
I remember I'd order food. A PA or someone's got to go get your food. And a salad comes back and you're like, no, I'm allergic to avocado. I said no avocado. So you don't yell at anyone, but like in your head, you're like, ah, how on earth? This is so insulting to my day. This is my lunch. And that is a moment I think that's a little bit like, you actually do start to focus on things that are like, buddy, you're okay. You could just go get another lunch. That's where you're like, I was so specific. Usually you're not mad at the PA, you're mad at the restaurant or where you ordered from. Like, it says no avocado. Those idiots. Yeah. And it's just calm down.
I got to be honest with you, Fred. It was that kind of stuff that made me stop tour managing. I really like being on the road. I love being at a show every night. And the truth of the matter is, if I look back on my years of tour managing with Radiohead, with the Bodines, with PJ Harvey, with the Samples, with the Chills from New Zealand, others, it's like, you know, there were many more good days than bad days. It was a great job to have at a certain age, right? But as I've said on the show before, I had this feeling like I was just taking shit from prima donnas. Because, again, the avocados showed up on the salad. There were olives, black olives on the pizza. And it was just like, I had a hard time with that. I was also responsible for collecting all the money from the promoter and make sure I was negotiating a good deal on behalf of my artist.
Yeah.
And they were getting paid every penny. That felt really important to me. And to come back after a hard settlement and say, Alex, there's black olives on the pizza. It's like, okay, maybe I need to look for another line of work.
Yeah. And their defense, touring can be so boring that there's nothing to focus on. You're just like, you have 3 hours in between when you get there and then when you go on stage.
Yeah.
You can't really leave. So what are you looking at? You're just like looking at a pizza and you're just like, how can I make this unpleasant?
Well, Butch Vig told us that when you go on tour, your IQ immediately drops 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
So they have just sort of accepted that as a truism in garbage. And I think everything's kind of filtered through that.
Yeah.
Well, going back to SNL for a second, I read that some performances that you saw that were so inspiring to you are very similar to mine. Devo on Fridays, Blondie on SNL, and Talking Heads on Letterman. This is my Talking Heads Fear of Music tattoo on my arm.
Oh, I love it.
I would like to add Captain Beefheart doing Hothead.
Fantastic.
In 1980.
Agreed. Yep.
And Elvis Costello, obviously Radio, the thing that sort of got him banned, but not really. And I got to meet Elvis for the first time. His first five albums to me are just the most perfect five albums
anyone's ever come
out of the shoot with, you know. And then one more is Bowie on SNL with Klaus Nomi.
What a dream.
It's such a cool thing.
So good, yeah.
And also, you know, I've read about your favorite albums. I love that you love Ram.
Yep.
McCartney's Ram. I think Admiral Halsey is probably the most Beatles, post-Beatles song ever, right?
Sure.
My bandmates from The Falling Will End is they end up joining Brian Wilson after we quit. So they toured all around with Brian Wilson, and McCartney was always at shows because he loves Brian so much. And it was just great to hear that he's like the Keanu Reeves of music, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you met him?
Oh, yeah. And he was absolutely nice and relaxed and makes everyone around him relaxed.
That's so great.
Anyone who's nervous, he really puts everyone at ease, which is really nice.
If anyone has the right to be a prima donna, it's McCartney. And to hear that he's like got 5 minutes for the cleaning staff. A friend of mine is a Gary Anthony Williams. He's a brilliant improviser. Gary was asked to be at a read-through. So he goes there. And it's like all A-list people. And he had to sign an NDA and he didn't know who it was for. And the person who's orchestrating it is 10 minutes late. It's McCartney. Comes in and Gary goes, I'm black. I don't care about the Beatles. They're just white people's music to me. But after being with him for 10 minutes, I understood why everyone's a Beatles fan.
Yeah, that story tracks. That sounds right.
Okay, tell your great Spinal Tap moment with Prince at the after party.
I have a better story where I met him at the studio of NBC and I came up behind him. We were going towards the stage and I sort of said, hey, Prince. And he turned around and he was friendly, but also instantly charismatic. He is so completely Prince and has so much charisma that the whole room. And not just because he's famous. I think it's just that there's something about him where the whole room was like just really gravitated towards him. And he was like the center of the room.
There's nobody I'd rather watch play guitar than Prince.
Yeah.
It's the most effortless thing I've ever seen.
Effortless and impressive and also entertaining, but also beautiful. It's like a million things at once.
I saw him perform in Washington, D.C. at one point. He did basically a three-hour medley. His so many hits that it was just 3 hours of nonstop music. He'd play like half a song and then go right into the next one. It's epic.
And it's kind of a good idea because it's almost like saying, you know how this the rest of this goes.
Right, exactly.
Fred, I want to talk a little more about the music you like because you have quite a musical vocabulary. You did that YouTube feature, What's in Your Bag, where they ask musicians about what they picked to buy at Amoeba Records. And your choices were so esoteric. The only one I even heard of was the Turtles because they sang Happy Together. And, you know, it reminded me of the days when I worked at the Chicago Reader where everyone's taste is so arcane and they're so critical. And you could get in a fight with someone about Captain Beefheart because, well, he has a song, Dachau Blues, and Dachau is such a typical concentration camp. If the MC5 did it, they'd have definitely picked something more esoteric like Mauthausen. So anyway, what fringy stuff are you listening to today?
There's a band called Wild Nothing who just put an album out.
Okay.
And I'm really, really loving Wild Nothing.
All right.
They've been around a while. They're not brand new, but they just put out an album recently, but they're great.
I will look them up. Thank you.
Fred, as we wrap up here, Gretchen, our producer, and I are both in Portland, so we would be remiss not to mention Portlandia. And when Carrie Brownstein...
I think that's how I got connected to you because of Corin from Sleater-Kinney.
Right. Yeah.
She's the one who connected us. Yeah.
That's right, Fred. Yeah. Corin's a family friend. And she and Carrie were early guests on our show. And so that's what I wanted to bring up was they shared, obviously, a bunch of great Sleater-Kinney stories. But I also asked Carrie about Portlandia. And she told us about one sketch in particular. Let's listen.
Fred once pissed me off so much in a scene because he was playing a terrible driver. And I had to sit with him as a terrible driver. And there's just an involuntary reaction when someone's like slamming on the brakes. Like, even if you love them, you're like, I hate you. Like, I'm so angry right now. So anyway, after that, I always drove in any sketch. And I pull into the driveway and then we're supposed to run out. and I didn't put it in park. So we're running out, and Fred went around the back of the car as the car is rolling down the driveway. It was so scary. And someone actually, a very valiant crew member, jumped in and stopped the car. That was not just Spinal Tap moment, but so horrifying. That was a near-death experience for Fred that I would have caused.
Yes.
What do you remember about that?
I forgot about that. I remember the moment after where, you know, like when you realize something very dramatic just happened, that silence after, like, hey, if he hadn't done that, that car would have rolled down the driveway. It's almost like watching a scene from an action movie or something. And there was like this sort of like, phew, that we really avoided a catastrophe, a true catastrophe. And shooting Portlandia was like my favorite thing in my life. I loved it so much. And the one thing I'm kind of grateful for is that we never had a car accident. Just because, like, there's pedestrians everywhere. You know, we shot out in the street, a lot of people on bicycles.
Yeah.
And when you're shooting a scene, we really drove. And I'm a little bit like, thank God that there were no accidents.
Right.
Because I'm just like, it's not a controlled environment. It's not like shooting in a back lot in Hollywood. We were really out there. It was a low budget show. So I'm just so glad for all our, you know, because, you know, you're wearing wigs and costumes and stuff. You're not fully engaged as a driver. You know, you got lines. So I'm just glad that that was the height of car mishaps that we had.
Yeah, that's great.
So you're glad that you didn't kill anyone, that Portlandia ended before you killed somebody. Is that what you're saying?
Even if we like had damaged a storefront, if we had, you know, scraped a bicycle, anything, I'm just so glad it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, I had a vegan cheese company here with my wife, and we quit after 3 years, and we're like, God, I'm glad I got it before I killed somebody, because it was such a wild recipe. It's like, sometimes it's good to quit when you're ahead.
Yeah. Something could happen.
When you don't have manslaughter charges. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the one time you and I met in person, Fred, was at the Clinton Street block party, and you were there watching a friend of yours band, and I was with my twin daughters, who are now 16, but were like 4 at the time. So I brought them over and said hello and mentioned to you that I'd known Chris Farley back in the Wisconsin days.
Wow.
And I said, oh, are you here doing research for the show? And you said, no, I'm just here with my friend. And when that band stopped, you immediately jumped on stage and started roading, you know, bucking the drum set off stage and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, there's a good friend to have.
That's a good friend. That's a good friend for damn sure.
Exactly. Somebody will buck your gear.
Well, Fred, thank you so much for being on. This has been fantastic. Do you have any social media presence that you could tell our listeners where they could keep up on what you're doing and everything?
Nah, I'm happy that someone's listening to this, and that's good enough for me. I ask for nothing.
Fair enough. You know, we're from Milwaukee, Alex and I. That's where we met.
I love Milwaukee. That art museum is fantastic.
Oh, isn't it fantastic?
One of the best I've ever been to.
It's amazing.
One of the best I've ever been to.
Liberace is from Milwaukee. Do you know that?
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that? Yeah, he's from Milwaukee. And my band before Falling Willendus was Women's Liberace.
Wow.
That was like 87 to 89 or 90.
Good name. Liberace was great. What a legend.
He was great.
Thank you so much, Fred.
Thank you. And tap into America.
Okay, listeners. If you thought that was fun, try this. Let's see if you were paying attention. It's time for a game of Fred Said. Question 1. Fred said about Spinal Tap that they really match perfectly the experience of being in a band. And even the late, great George Harrison referenced Spinal Tap in an interview. True or false? Well, of course, that would be true. Great, you're 1 for 1, listeners. Question 2. Fred said that when he was a drummer in his band Trenchmouth, his mindset about success should have been more Jesus Lizardy. True or false? Okay, awesome. That one's true. You're on a roll. Here's our last question, question 3. Fred said that driving while Portlandiaing can be hazardous. Specifically, you're wearing wigs, costumes, and stuff. You're not fully engaged as a driver. True or false? True! That's our PSA to you, listeners. Do not try that one at home. Nicely done. You're all winners. Thanks to Corin Tucker for helping us to bring Fred Armisen to the show. Too Much Effing Perspective is a Milwaukee Talkies original. Our editor is Gretchen Kilby. Our music composer is J.K. Harrison. Please follow us on Instagram at TMEP Show. Visit our website at tmepshow.com to sign up for our mailing list and find our other episodes featuring rock stars, comedians, and entertainment luminaries whose bizarro stories we enjoy and we think you will too on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you listen.
Although it would be as great as having armadillos in our trousers, this podcast is not affiliated with This Is Spinal Tap, and no person or entity connected with the film has sponsored or endorsed its content. The podcast is not affiliated, sponsored, or licensed by Authorized Spinal Tap LLC or Century of Progress Productions.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Evergreen Podcast Network.